So you know what I mean? It's like, imagine you're a new investor these days and you really want to get started investing, but you don't know who to talk to or what to go. You can go to a YouTube video. You'll find one of three or four YouTube people with a bunch of clickbait faces like, whoa, wow. Like, is the market going to crash? It's like, I don't, you know, why am I going to waste my time with that? Are you going to go through and flip through 100 different books on the library or go through 1,000 different articles on on whatever website you find at imright.com? And then you're going to start reading through it and your eyes are going to bleed. After your 45th trip to Investopedia, trying to discern what people are talking about, what dividend reinvesting programs are, you're eventually going to just fold and you're going to go, I have to just talk to somebody. There needs to be somebody I can talk to that can break this down Barney style and spoon feed it to me like I'm a child, right? Who's going to teach me investing? Okay. So you go and you go talk to that one friend that you had maybe back in college or high school, or even worse, it might be someone much younger than you that got started investing just because they're like, you know, they're a Zoomer and they started investing as soon as they turned 18 because they have several thousand dollars and their dad taught them something. It happens. Happens a lot. Anyways, he's going to start telling you, blah, 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 go to Wall Street Bets, and you're going to open it up and you're going to see just vitriol. You're going to see memes. They're going to be entertaining. It's going to be exciting. Everyone's going to be having a great time. And everyone's going to be talking about money and posting great photos. You're going to feel like a warm, welcome member of a group. I got to warn you, friends, what you've just stumbled into is a crack den. And that warm friend that you once smiling and brought you in, when he hands you that glowing screen with Wall Street Bets just glowing across it, that is a crack pipe. And those meme stocks that you were about to ingest and plug into your portfolio are going to alter your mind in ways that you're not going to be helpful with. Like, this is your portfolio. This is your portfolio on meme stocks. Do you understand? It's going to hurt. Everyone's going to be encouraging. And when the times are good, the highs, fantastic. Everyone's going to be so on top of it. They're going to love it. But the moment it crashes, you're going to look around like, okay, well, who's got the money? Someone was supposed to pay me for this. I was pretty sure. No one has the money, bro. Why? Because you walked into a crack house with money and expected to walk out still with money while smoking crack. It doesn't work that way. It does not work that way. So now what happens? You stumbled out, you're tired, you haven't slept in 12 days. The only reason why you're not currently looking at your meme stocks right now is because it's the weekend. It's and they had to shut it off for you so you could sleep. And before you start scratching your arms and going over to the 24/7 cryptocurrency channel, maybe you happen to stumble across this podcast. Or maybe someone talks to you and tells you like, hey, come here, man. Like, hey, maybe you should try and learn, pick up a book or something. Talk to someone that's actually been around and had some experience actually trading the markets. Like, people can actually show you how much they've earned over the course of a year. Like, you don't have to just trust their street cred. Like, you can see their Carfax. You can ask for it. Be like, yo, can I see your investing Carfax? You know, like, these are quest. You can do all this, guys. Like, please do. Like, it's your money. It's only your future, right? So, like, please take every precaution you can going into like how you learn, right? I think that's ultimately what we want to provide. We want to provide that safe halfway home for like you addicts, degenerates, you Wall Street junkies out there that literally just can't help yourself. Like, what can I do to invest intelligently that's not just snorting AMC stock? You know, this is your chance, right? This is hopefully where we can help transition you into a functioning human being with all your brain cells still. That's what we kind of hope to do, you know, talk about here. We're going to talk about some common sense books, some books that will help you, the investor, learn how to navigate these here waters. Some quotes that we think really stand out in some literature we read, and some opinions. If you start reading, you got to remember, hey, these are the type of people we're talking about. They have their own agendas too, and what are those agendas? And I think today me and Josh are going to try and figure that out. So you money crazy lunatics. My name is Brandon Young. I'm one of your hosts with the most today with my co-host.
Joshua Luke Muller, what's going on, guys? That
What's
was
popping, man?
beautifully said, Brandon. I think a lot of people are going to get a kick out of that one.
You know, I hope so, man. And here's the thing. There are so many books out there in the world that honestly, let me tell you, if you read every single book out there in the world, all the opinions out there, they're going to equal out to zero. Really is. There's so many opinions, so many strategies, so many contrary opinions. I would say if you're looking at people and they're constantly flexing new book after new book, new book after new book that they're reading, you're probably not looking at the right type of person. It's better to focus, in my opinion, on the top books in the world. You reread those until you garner every lesson and pearl and gem and wisdom.
Absolutely.
And then you focus on those, right? They're classics for a reason. They've stood the test of time for a reason.
Yep. Yeah, because a lot of these investing books, look, a lot of the great ones you're referring to were written back in the 30s, 40s, 50s. And they're so good that except updating some tables of data, the principles in those books exist today and they are still used by the masses. Yeah, you're 100% right. There's not many of them out there. There's not, at least for me, I think you and I would probably come up with some top ones that most investors would call out. And from name recognition, because they are legit.
So let's, I know the book you picked is the Warren Buffett Golden Standard.
No, for no, books. Wrong. Oh? Fake news.
What is it?
It's the Little Book of Common Sense Investing. What you're referring to is The Intelligent Investor.
I see, another great book.
But this one, and I'm sure some of you guys have heard, it's written by John C. Bogle, who many of you might know, founder of Vanguard. So he's a big indexer. So he's kind of he's to your Kathy Wood. That's what I would say. He's my man, and Kathy Wood's your mama.
Gotcha. I got you. That's a nice little family dynamic we got going on here. Yeah. It's you know, and I picked just Robert Kiyosaki in general. I read four books of his. He has a litany of works out there, and I tried to read through all of it. I swear I really did, but I was only able to cut through four of his works: Rich Dad Poor Dad, What the Rich Invest In That the Poor and Middle Class Do Not, Why A Students Work for C Students, and Why B Students End Up Working for the Government. You know, so there's some great titles there, and as you can tell, he really feels some sort of way about money and knowledge and education, and I feel like we'll be able to jump into both of those. So let's pick a couple golden quotes out. Let's try and pick some news.
Okay.
Something over here.
What you got?
Okay, I think one of the first ones that Robert Kiyosaki really says is, "Don't be addicted to money. Work to learn. Don't work for money, work for knowledge."
Mm.
And I think this is important because there's so many aspects in life where you working a certain job will develop you certain skills and certain certifications, certain experience that is worth more than any of the money you could have gained on that experience. And more often than not, people will turn down workplace experience because it doesn't fit their dollar bill.
Yep. Right?
And they end up being a slave to their money rather than taking a chance, taking a risk on themselves, so to speak, to learn that stuff and hope that that would help them set up for a more secure future.
Absolutely. You know, especially for you younger guys tuning in, you know, money's important for a first job. But you also have to understand any first job, typically, the money is going to be shit anywhere you go. So you might as well look for the job that has the most to offer past the money, right? That's experience, things of that nature, like Brandon's talking to. That's what's really important, because that's really what's going to matter and carry you through to your professional career or in your entrepreneurial endeavors. I mean, what do you think about that?
I think that's exactly right. And I think that really ties into my next quote, if I can just roll into it, which is, everyone can tell you the risk, but an entrepreneur can see the reward. Now, this is, I think this is really important, especially when it comes to stocks and investing. And if you take a more active role in your investing, this is it. You know, oftentimes it takes an entrepreneur and it takes an entrepreneurial spirit to look at something that could be and see that potential. And really take an examination of, you know, do we have enough kinetic energy to make this happen? And oftentimes, everything that you do when you're creating assets and gathering assets, you have to look at the payoff, the reward. And if you're constantly, if you're only looking at past metrics and past performance, well, then you have a hard time, you know, you'll have a hard time actually making any sort of risk to get out there. And I'm not saying like, as to use this as a quote to forego risk management. But it's more like I would encourage people that are thinking about investing in and they're still trying to figure something out. I would encourage you that you need to start looking at what sort of risks you can take that have mitigations to their risk, you know, in general, make you that reward.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I, you know, I think, and that's a good point. I think what's most important that you and I both know people don't do is really understand your financial goals and understand your risks. Like, what, how do you perceive risk? Because everyone perceives it differently. And my number one piece of advice for that is go on Google and find an investor risk tolerance questionnaire. We're going to put one on our website soon, Brandon. But basically what this does is it kind of lumps you in certain buckets. And this isn't, you know, the end all be all, but it kind of gives you an idea of kind of your style. And it helps you better understand what risks you're comfortable with. Because I think everyone perceives themselves to be a lot more risky than they really are. And that's just illustrated by the fact that people perceive losses a lot worse than equal gains. So I think it's just important to educate yourself on your risk tolerances.
Absolutely. That's a good one. Here's another beautiful one.
Let's hear it.
Workers work hard enough not to be fired, and owners pay just enough so that the workers won't quit.
Complacency.
And I think what's important here to really highlight is, so there's four quadrants that Kiyosaki likes to talk about, right? You have your self-employed, you have your employed people, you have your investors, and you have your business owners. The premises and the takeaways is this. If you are an employee, you have to understand that you are a solution to somebody else's money problem, and they are paying you enough so they can still obtain value from you and work you into the machinery that is their business that helps enrich them. Right. You're building their assets as you work for them. You are in turn gaining experience and money for your time and labor.
Yep.
If you're self-employed, you get to skip that. You are your own employer, right? And you are at your peak performance because you know that your own money is directly determined by your own effort. So of course, you're going to feel more inspired to work for yourself.
Right.
If you're a business owner, right, the other thing you have to understand is your employees, you can't always expect stellar performance from them all the time, unless they're incredibly worried about losing their position or being fired. And now that doesn't mean necessarily that morale is always going to be terrible, but it simply means the more exciting you make your workplace is and more competitive people are trying to be in your workplace, that too will encourage performance.
Right.
So there's several ways to look at that one, but I think that one's incredibly important for everyone in all stages of life.
I like that. I'll toss one out, man, off the little book of Common Sense Investing, boys. So let's start off. But if we can distinguish the reasons the past was what it was, then we can establish reasonable expectations about the future.
Ooh,
you like that one? I really like that one. Those, you know, I think that's a great one. Let's hear your take, Brandon, on that.
That's exactly right. I think it's those that ignore history are doomed to repeat it,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
It's people that don't pay attention to trends. It's people that jump into a market rich with history and action and events that don't take the time to research the history of those events that are always the most blindsided and confused,
right,
and ultimately the ones most burned.
And
knowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But people, to your point, would say, well, new trends emerge all the time. And that's, I wouldn't disagree at all, but that's where risk management comes into play, where I think people miss the mark on that.
If I'm allowed to go a little off the wheels here,
right?
One of my personal figures that I always respected growing up was General Mattis, right? As a young cadet, I would read all the books off of his reading list, and one of the books that he would always read and keep on him close at hand was Scipio Africanus, which was the books written by the Roman Empire about the Romans keeping records of their wars that they fought all over North Africa and the Middle East.
Right.
And the reason why is because General Mattis liked to compare a lot of the current conflicts and issues that he was experiencing with the Middle East with a lot of the issues that they were facing over there in the Roman Empire some 2,000 years ago. So when he sat down and compared it, he was always blown away that he said, no matter how much the technology has changed, the fundamentals of warfare in that region never did, right? People still behaved and acted in many of the same ways. And essentially, there was no new problem that had not been faced under the sun before.
Right.
Simply technology provides a different flavor of it. And I think markets follow a lot of those same similar movements, right? Like, while there are major differences that change over time with the advents of regulation and technology. Also, there's still those fundamental movements of creating assets, you know, selling things to create liabilities for other people. Like, all of these things have always been integral
right.
to civilization, right? That only so much can really truly change at the heart of everything.
Yeah. That was beautifully said, Brandon.
Thanks, man.
I want to cry. And I love Mad Dog Mattis, too, for all you devil dogs out there. Hoorah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's controversial to say I like him still. I don't know. Apparently, a lot of people are were very opinionated last election, but that's okay.
Are we going to get canceled?
Hopefully, man. I think that means we're making it somewhere, right?
I hope so. You know what? I actually like that. Let's hope. Yeah. Let's hope.
Yeah. But we need to earn it, right? I think that's we don't just want to go gunning for it.
Yeah. I love that, though. It's funny shit.
Ooh, okay. How about, this is an interesting one. The love of money is not the root of all evil. Mm. The lack of money is the root of all evil.
Ooh. Ooh. You're going to get a lot of hate on that one, but I mean...
It's an interesting flip of the script, right?
Ooh. I don't know. I don't know if I agree or disagree with that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What about you, Brandon? So
I think it's kind of like, you have to understand that Kiyosaki is he's very Asian, and I mean that in the nicest way, because as an Asian
disclaimer,
myself,
Brandon's an Asian too, so yeah, you can say that. Yeah, okay.
And not just anyways, Pacific Islander, much like Mr. Kiyosaki, so I can resonate with him here. But what I'm saying is that throughout Asian cultures, there's a lot of mantras that are repeated and seen through, whether it's the Art of War, whether it's the Book of Five Rings, whether
right.
it's just inherent in Buddhism. One of the things that's always really put in here is that with everything good, there's always something bad. With everything bad, there's always something good. Having wealth is not necessarily a bad thing. And I feel like a lot of millennials yeah. our age look at wealth like a dirty word. Like
yeah.
for me, like the best thing I can do, especially since I grew up from a really lacking childhood, and I've always wanted to build more for myself,
yeah.
for my future.
For your future, yeah.
I want generational wealth for my kids. So if my kids want to go to college and they want, or where they want to go in life, I want to be able to provide that net
yeah.
for them. Right. Because like, I think they definitely need to earn it. I need to teach morals and everything, but who doesn't want to be able to provide for people that are close to them that need help, even if it's just friends or, you know,
yeah.
close ones that are going through a tough time, being able to help people around you,
right.
and having that excess wealth is what makes you a strong pillar in your community. Right.
Yeah. I mean, look, money's a tool. And just like, and look, money is a tool that can be used for good or bad. Just like, you know, a hammer can be used for good or bad. You're not going to call a hammer freaking evil. And so with money, generational wealth gets a bad rep too. But I totally agree. I think generational wealth is a great thing. And it comes down to you instilling the principles and morals that you think are appropriate for carrying this responsibility of money. And when you get people like Bill Gates... And people of that caliber, I think they represent the very best of money. When it comes to his foundation, I think you can't ignore how much good they've done. I mean, when they're almost responsible entirely for eradicating polio, it's like, mm-hmm. I think that's the right. very best of what money can do.
And that's the thing, right? It's you also have to not be complacent whenever they step out of line.
Yeah.
It's this interesting dichotomy. On one hand, you have to look at them and go like, wow, they take a lot of supply chain stuff from countries that are
yep.
definitely destitute, definitely controlled by warlords, where, you know, money can flow in and out of these like really bad groups.
Yep.
But on the other hand, they're also the only company that is the Bill and Melissa Gates Foundation puts more money into the World Health Organization.
Yep.
More than any other country except the United States of America.
Absolutely.
The United States of America and the Bill and Melissa Gates Foundation, they make up like 70% of all the funding for all of the good stuff that goes on in vaccine development and
yeah.
you know, water and education being brought to a lot of these areas. So it's, you know, like most things, there's a give and take.
Yeah.
And like most things, if you look hard enough, you'll find good and bad in pretty much every single scenario.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I think I think what the ultimate thing here, where I think where people get worried, is the lack of money is the root of all evil. Are you saying that poor people are evil? No, that's not what we're saying at all. But I think what it really boils down to is whenever there are people that are seriously lacking things that they desperately need, you know, people are one rumbly tummy away from burning down a building, looting, stealing, whatever they got to do to survive. You know, it is human nature. And sometimes being forced into situations, right, really makes you, it shows people at their best and worst. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes can be their worst.
Yeah.
What's another one for you?
I like this one. Despite the huge impact of speculative returns up and down during most of the individual decades, there's virtually no impact over the long run. Speculative returns have. So basically in that book, they come up with this return component that's essentially over the course of the last 100 years with the S&P 500, they come up with a number that's about a 10% annual return. And 9.5% of that is just long-term, long-run market return. And the other 0.5% is from that short-term speculative piece. So I really thought that was interesting. That over the long run, trends hold. I think that's the main takeaway. Generally speaking, you know, the market return, it trends upward. And so, I mean, you can't make that case for every individual stock. But, you know, if you're going to make the case, you know, is the stock market a good investment? Should I get in the stock market? I think the simple answer is yes.
Yes.
You will make money over the long run if you're, I know diversification is a weird word, but you will if you do that approach. Almost 100%, I could almost guarantee that that would happen. I mean, if you're diversified in funds. I mean, so I thought that one was beautiful.
A good one, and I think this will be my last keystone quote I'll say about Robert Kiyosaki before I just kind of talk about my opinions on him as an author. He said, success is a poor teacher. We learn the most about ourselves when we fail, so don't be afraid of failing. Failing is a part of the process of success, and you cannot have success without failure.
Yeah.
I think for me as a Tesla investor, you know, I had to mention it at least once this episode, big success in my first major investment made me incredibly overconfident and super headstrong. And
it's a good take.
I didn't, you know, I messed up a little bit here and there with a couple investments, nothing too bad. I'm still, you know, incredibly ahead from where I started. But I will say that from a lot of near misses that I only narrowly sidestepped because I had a lot of really smart friends who gave me solid advice. You know, I've definitely learned you cannot take your position for granted in a market. And it can swing violently. There's volatility left and right. You know, it's you have to be willing to sit down and actually learn from your movements. And because the world doesn't really – will never pull you aside and be like, hey, Brandon, this is the lesson that you should have learned from that. It's up to you to teach yourself the lessons you learn. And there's nothing worse than teaching yourself the wrong lesson. And I feel like mistakes have a way of humbling you. Yeah. And I'd rather be humbled and taught something than to become overconfident and keep, you know, building a false sense of confidence and then ultimately lose that money on something risky.
Right.
What is that called? The hot hand fallacy in basketball?
I love that.
Exactly. Yeah. But on to Mr. Kiyosaki himself, though. I got to say, after reading 4 books, honestly, if you had just like took the first book, Rich Dad Poor Dad, and then rearranged all the page numbers and then reassembled them and then
put they're
them
the into same book.
It's all the same book. Yeah. Like they're all the same book, and more importantly, as I started doing some research, I figured out, you know, the whole Rich Dad Poor Dad. Let me break it down.
Isn't there controversy about him though?
Yeah. So here's the deal, man.
Yeah.
He grew up with a dad who was a hardworking dude, spent his entire life working for the same company, made decent money, but he never bought assets, right? So because of that, he ended up retiring, you know, poor. But he also had a rich, like, stepfather figure who, like, mentored and taught him. And, like, so he grew up contrasting the lessons learned between his rich dad and his poor dad and highlighting the differences. And it's a really good coming of age book of a guy who learned from his mentors and da 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 da. But later, it turns out like there was actually no rich dad. The rich dad, quote unquote, was amalgamations of different knowledge and random tidbits of advice.
Okay.
That he just spliced together with different friends and financial figures and people he met in his life. He built up this idea of a rich dad and imagined what the rich dad would say in each of these positions. So, you know, and aside from that, a lot of the numbers that this guy claims in a lot of his books that he made and sold, like apparently when a lot of people have gone through and fact checked a lot of this, and it seems like a lot of it's not actually, like he was definitely successful, but to the extent of his success, it seems like a lot of it was hyped up in the book.
Right.
I mean, it's your own book, right? You can say whatever you want. You can say you rode a unicorn down the hallway. Like yeah, that's yeah. Do your thing, dude. But so what I would say is for people who are going into that book, any books by Robert Kiyosaki, it's a good mindset book. It's a good book to pick up the right mantras. It's a good book for you to get a feeling of what your moral compass should look like and what your mindset should be. But don't ever look at it and go, this is my financial advice. Kiyosaki said to keep going hard. If I kept doing this, I'd be a winner.
Right.
Like, he's also a storyteller. And I know this because I'm a storyteller.
Yes, you are, baby.
Really recognizes another storyteller when they're weaving to that together craft. A lot of what he's doing is just trying to keep your attention on you. And, you know, and I looked at a bunch of his YouTube videos too.
Yeah, I didn't like them.
Really deep in the yeah, it really highlights this uncomfortable classism, which I have been trying to stay away from. I don't like the rich versus poor. Mm. I don't even like that dichotomy because honestly, like rich and poor to me are mindsets, and I know a lot of people would disagree, but like
no,
it. You know, being broke is, hey, I don't have money. Being poor is, I've given up on ever getting out of being broke. Right?
Yeah, to poor me, it's is like, definitely a mindset.
Absolutely. Like, and so if you're...
Like, a mindset that you prefer short-term consumption versus long-term financial success. And so you're you care more about that. And so that's what a poor person is to me. Someone who cares more about the now than the future. That's exactly what I think.
And I think it's, you know, I rewatched The Wolf of Wall Street very recently. It's like that's my get up and go. Sometimes I don't even eat coffee in the morning. I just play little clips of it and I'm like frothing at the mouth.
Oh, about to go work, right?
But that scene when Jordan Belfort was telling everyone to get ready to start calling people.
Oh, yes.
And he's like, you know, are you late in your bills? Good.
Pick up the phone and start dialing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, is your landlord about to evict you? Good. Pick up the phone and start dialing. You know, that's the energy, right? It's like, hey, is your life in a rut and you hate it? Do you want to stop?
Pick up the phone.
Yeah, no, like save your money and invest it. Start getting ready to make start setting up a way to make a passive income where you're not going to be tied to that job anymore.
Yeah. I mean, the mindset in that movie, although a lot of the things he did were super over the top and inappropriate, I would argue his mindset, I like his mindset. I think the way he applied it was incorrect, but I think just his energy and his willingness, you know, I liked it. I respect it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the energy. It's that go-getter attitude. It's the it's the belief in oneself that you can make it. And rely on those things. Now, I'm not saying to go out and swindle people. There's so many good ways. Like, honestly, if Jordan Belfort lived a life half as lucrative as he did and just cut out the illegal stuff, he still would have been filthy, disgusting rich.
Yeah.
He would have been able to keep living his life. It's just, in the end of the day, his vices got the best of him.
Yeah, because he was good at what he did. He was probably one of the best salesmen to ever live.
Hmm. And so, you know, and a lot of really great salespeople have issues like that. Like Grant Cardone is another person. He's supposed to be a sales guru. The guy's like, you know, out of rehab and just like, you know, from there started like an empire.
You know, they have a good interview, him and Jordan Belfort.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's very controversial. Basically, Jordan Belfort whooped his ass on a sales pitch. Oh, you got to YouTube it. Oh, yeah.
Okay, no, that's definitely going on my to watch list. That's amazing. Wow. That's that's my one golden takeaway from this whole podcast. Your quotes were amazing, but like, ooh, I'm I'm getting kind of excited.
For those of you guys that don't know or haven't heard of these two gentlemen, I'd research them. I think Jordan Belfort and Grant Cardone, you can learn a lot from them for good or bad, for better or worse. I think you can. And that interview I would definitely listen to.
Now, again, keep in mind, these are people that have made their living trying to sell people things.
So don't buy anything off of it.
Any video you see of them, they're going to try and sell you themselves, right? They're going to be like, look at me, I'm Mr. Professional. Like, but I will say this for Jordan Belfort. If you've ever lived a life that was so insane that Martin Scorsese hired Leonardo DiCaprio to play you, to live your life out, and they didn't really have to embellish all that much in the movie, you're probably an interesting person.
Yeah. You know?
That's a big one.
I would say so.
Oh, you know what? You know what else I watched for the first time?
What?
Was The Big Short.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal movie.
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah, great movie that really high. I think they did a phenomenal job. I think it's almost entirely accurate on the 08 housing crisis. If you guys haven't watched that, it has who's in it? Oh, it's God.
It had Brad Pitt.
Ryan Gosling. The guy from The Office. I can't even think of his name.
Steve Carell.
It's Steve Carell. You know, so just a star-studded cast. Definitely listen.
And I gotta say, like, it did affirm something. Like, I hate bears. Like, even when they're right, I hate them. Bears are just the worst. You know.
Oh, and, yeah. The guy
Because even when bears make money, right? And I'm sorry if you're a bear out there, no hate, right? I'm a bull. It's what I am. I'm a new investor. I'm sure when I get older, I'll be a bear. It's just, you know, it's part of life. But
that's a boomer mindset.
It's a boomer mindset. But, like, whenever I see a bear make a bunch of money, you know, especially off my beloved Tesla stock, I always imagine them walking out of the casino, like high-fiving each other and dancing over the corpses of thousands of dead people. Like, that's my mental representation of you, and I hope you take it personally. That's all.
But to be fair, on the 08, I feel like the people that were riding it up to the top were dancing on poor people. I think.
Oh, yeah, of course. And at the end of the day, even the worst thing that happened to them is they were wrong and they lost their job, right? They have all the money they'd ever need.
Like, right. Yeah. The people that really lost in 08 either lost their homes or died due to unemployment because, you know.
It's one of the reasons I don't invest in big banks. I know a lot of people love finance institutions and cyclicals and stuff like that. But that's why I really like the disruptionary side of like finance. I really love disruptionary fintech stuff because, you know, that type of stuff only happens because they have like backing from like the government in a lot of ways to get that stuff
correct. Yeah, I understand the hatred.
I wouldn't even say it's hatred. I think it's just it's not my cup of tea.
Fair enough.
Right? I'm sure there's hundreds of thousands of moral bankers out there and investors in finance that really do mean well.
It's the few that give the whole group a bad rep, and that's the case for any group, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just bankers also have a lot of money, and people just get really jealous when they see people with a lot of money.
So. It comes with the territory. Well, let's wrap this one up, Brandon.
Yes, sir. Dude, I had a great episode with you.
Yeah,
this went really swimmingly.
Thank you guys for tuning in for this podcast. Brandon and I had a blast. Let us know in the comments. Make sure you're subscribed. Let us know what you want from us next. I think Brandon and I have planned a couple of current events, right? We're going to talk about some shit in the markets, hopefully in the next day or two. Go live on Instagram.
We didn't really want to become a news channel, but there's been so much happening in the market that's been causing so much like froth. Like we need to talk about some of it because it's getting kind of crazy.
You got to talk about it. And I want you guys to stay in the know. And, you know, for you guys and for myself specifically, I am very careful where I get my news. And Brendan and I are kind of passionate about making sure we put out good information so you can hear it here. You know, I'm not going to give you I'll try my best not to push my biases on you.
I only get all my news from the front page of Facebook and Reddit. So you know biased.
Wall Street Bets.
Straight from the tap.
Yeah. Perfect. You guys have a good one. Peace. As always, thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to next week's podcast. Stay hungry, guys.